Plug that in here in the class first. That if one understands the appearance and disappearance of the Lord, then one will not be subject to birth and death. So, yeah, not bad. So the idea is this understanding is we're trying to see what is happening, what's going on. I mean, there's unlimited angles, Krishna's unlimited, so there's no end to how one could discuss the topic. So just taking something, you know, some aspect, we'll try to discuss. Because basically speaking, if even one element sticks in one's consciousness, one's life is perfect. It doesn't need, you don't need a whole lot. You just need anything that's connected to Krishna. Because Krishna himself is perfect. So anything connected with Krishna therefore will be perfect. So Krishna is being the supreme. Let us say, yes, then he is perfect in all aspects. So we were just reading about, or Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is discussing, how Krishna is the repose of all contradictory qualities. So, because he has a potency that is able to make all these qualities not contradictory. So they perfectly are situated in him. So he is birthless, but he takes birth. Right? He's unlimited, but he has a form. He is form, he is omnipotent, but he is controlled. He is omnipresent, but he doesn't know by his yoga maya what is happening. So all these various aspects of his greatness, his majesty, his all-pervadingness, these are all very wonderful qualities, all special, and something that he possesses and no one else does. But at the same time, it's not the ultimate perfection. The ultimate is his interaction with his devotees. That's what Krishna himself finds to be special. Because it's not like us, where we're not the reservoir of qualities, or let's say, of opulences. We are an opulence, but we are not the source of opulence. That's Krishna. So if we get, and there's the concept that if you control something, then you're secure. And you'll enjoy. So the great endeavor, so for us, God's greatness, his power, his mystic potency, these are generally in the beginning seen as what's important. Oh, I did something wrong, God knows I'll get in trouble, so I shouldn't do this. Or these various aspects, how Krishna is going to get upset by so many aspects. So then we miss that being God means that you are the source of all opulence. So there is no insecurity. You are what creates that which we will consider generates security. right? We have money, we have position, we have facility. We'll say, and now I'm secure. But Krishna is the source of that. We're not. That's why we will consider that that's what makes the security. But for Krishna, he's the source. So that's not what makes security for him. There's not a time when he's ever insecure. Right? That's not one of his problems. Right? So this aspect for him then of being dependent upon the relationship with his devotees, that affection from his devotees towards him, that becomes something special to him. Being God, being great, being all-powerful, omnipotent, omnipresent, for him this is not special. This is just like, let's say, hey, you have a nose. So, you know, you're breathing. Yeah. So that's what it's for Krishna. It's not special. It's just him. So that interaction with the devotees, that dependency, that other elements like that, that we will consider will be the opposite of what we would consider great. And if I'm dependent, oh, that's not good. If if I'm not in control, that's not good. The only way I'm going to be happy is if I'm independent and in control. But Krishna doesn't think. He's saying how to be under the control of his devotees. Right? As they surrender, then he can manifest that. But of course, it has to be real. Because there is no illusion for Krishna. So it's not that this there would be some illusion of need of these things. No, it's the element that it's the taste that comes from relationship that impresses Krishna. Other things aren't so impressive like that. Being great's not that special. That someone appreciates the greatness, that's better. But that the person interacts with them, that they like him as a person despite the greatness, that's even more important. So for that relationship with us, then there has to be answers to things that just seem to us to be logical. That's the interesting element, is that for us, it's the experience of doing something that's important. We're not the cause of something, we're only an instrument, but we have to have logical answers. Right? Same, the contradictory element. We're expanding from Krishna, therefore the contradictory element will always remain. It will always be part of the feature. So, it can be explained because he appears. So then you have where Krishna so perfectly then arranges that all the various situations that are there can be all nicely knit together to make a wonderful situation. Means it's not great that the living entities are rebelling against him, but then and you have to create the material environment for them to express that independent endeavor. But at the same time, is by that, because of that need, that endeavor, that creative element, all these things, then you can have birth. You can have all these different establishment of the field that in the spiritual world has been there, you know, that where, how does it work? How does it come from? The soul's eternal. The soul's part and parcel of Krishna. So how do you get the element that you're in a particular relationship with Krishna because of some situation in which you appeared in the village of Vrindavan? Right? So that works out very nicely, because then in Gokul these things can happen. So here all these contradictions come together very nicely. How Krishna is beyond all this, but at the same time involved in all this. But his involvement's not because he must be involved or has to be involved. He wants to be involved. And that basis of wanting to be involved is because of his affection for the devotees. Then it becomes very nice. Right? He sees the son of Mother Jashoda. Then that establishes the whole relationship. One with Mother Jashoda, with everybody else in the community. So he's the son of Mother Jashoda. Then that makes him the prince of Vrindavan. Then that also makes that he has authorities. So when he's being naughty, then you can go threaten him that you'll go tell the authorities. You know, so all these different elements come up that you can have. You know, he is, you know, one of the young youth of the community. Therefore, other youths of the community can have that relationship. All these things are able to be manifest through this situation. So it's not a matter of just, it's there, it changes. It doesn't have to change. It's so perfect. God being perfect, then what he establishes is perfect. So eternally, one can be involved in these things. Eternally, five rasas are going on. No one's getting bored. No one wants to drop off some of the ones that are a bit archaic, you know. Or no one wants to add something because something's left out. No, that's perfect. Everyone's satisfied. So, this appreciation that Krishna does these things, appears and disappears, because this creates the particular taste in the relationship, that's what's special. He appears here basically because we're here. If we're not here, why does it have to happen? But we're here. So he cares. That's why he comes. He sits in everyone's hearts. You know, that bug that's walking by, Krishna's sitting in his heart. Now, you look at the bug, it's not necessarily an exciting day, right? He's walking along, and then he falls off the edge of the table, right? And then he sits upside down for a while until he turns himself over, right? And then he crawls off somewhere else, bumps into a wall, right? Now, the big decision, does he go left or does he go right? Right? You know, so this is the bug's day, right? Then he'll bump into some algae and he'll eat it. You know, so it's all happening. So, but Krishna sits there, right? One could say, okay, he's sitting in the heart of the human being. Because a human being could make the choice to serve or not. So that would be something interesting. But the bug's going to be a bug his whole life. And according to his previous karma, as a human, that's how his bug life is going to go. Right? So it's just the way it is. But Krishna's there because he cares. So this, he appears here for the devotees. Now, whether someone understands they're a devotee or not, that's a different point. So of those who don't understand and those who do, then naturally those who do, that's the more important interaction, because that then means him as a person is interacting. The other is just him as God makes the arrangements. Paramatma arranges that, you know, you had a little bit of good karma there, so therefore the bug bumps into plenty to eat. Or the as a human, he didn't do so good, so now as a bug, he's hard for him to find things to eat. Right? So these things are already arranged, so the material energy can take care. But he comes himself personally. But it's for those who are acting in the position of a devotee, then that's what becomes the special element. That's actually why he comes, to interact with the devotees. But because everybody is a devotee, then at any point they could take it up. So he's here. So then, yeah, these aspects are important. His disappearance, then when we say, well, this is not so nice, But this is because we're affected by the element of the temporariness of the world. So because the soul's eternal, temporariness does not work well with the mentality of the living entity. Eternality does. But if you're dealing with eternality, there is no disappearance. So the disappearance is there because we go through this constant chain or cycle of disappearance. But now in this disappearance, we'll consider it as bad, because there's a loss. But the point is Krishna being eternal, we're being eternal, there's no loss. The element of the disappearance then makes it the aspect of that separation. The intensity of it it's more great, because one doesn't become familiar when one's separated from the person. One becomes familiar when one's with the person. Does that make sense? So the idea is the element of separation makes the aspect of being with the person greater, more appreciated. And simultaneously being with them makes the separation greater. So Krishna does all these wonderful things. So the disappearance is something that's, you know, appreciated experience. It's not something that's discussed much. The pastime is not something that we consider a greatly relishable pastime. It's there. But it's the effect that it generates. So the appearance, then that's the great thing. Krishna's come, Krishna's there, Krishna's with the devotees. So that becomes special. So otherwise, we could say he's God, he's always there, so yeah, he's always been there, so what's the big deal? No, he's appeared. So these elements, this is where taste comes. So this is also where we need a logical explanation, but at the same time as the environment that we're going to apply this explanation to is again back to just feelings, expressions. That's it. So that's what's actually important, is that we appreciate how that Krishna, the reason that Krishna is coming and doing all his activities is for the devotees, is for his relationship with the devotees. Now, to those great devotees, his eternal associates, then that goes on. Those great devotees who are able to take part in that, then they can take, by that association of those eternal associates, they can come to that same standard of affection. And for those who haven't been attracted by the wonderfulness of the pastimes, one can become attracted. And for those who are not interested at all and are just creating trouble, then you remove the trouble so that there's a more favorable situation for those who are interested. So all these things Krishna is doing. Any questions on this? Comments? Yes. Means how is he still attracted? Okay. Question is that if the devotee has taking up devotional service, it is said that one has gone through all the different species of life and situations that there is in Brahma's creation. And then then one naturally has that background that, okay, been there, done that, it didn't quite work. So one's looking for some alternative. But at the same time we see is there may be attraction to the karma, jnana, or yoga. So how would that attraction still be left? So the basic principle is it's a habit. One's just used to that. So the point is that one's not interested, but the point is the living entity, being alive, has desires. This idea that one will give up desire, this is for Mayavadis and Buddhists. It's not a reality. Much of the time we say, oh, you have to give up all desire and all. No, that's Mayavad philosophy. The soul can't give up desire. There's no question of it. There's never a time that it's ever happened. It's talked about, but it doesn't happen, just like in scripture. You know, we hear of, you know, thousands of people, you know, elevating themselves to better material situations, heavenly planets, mystic powers, better facilities here. We've heard of, you know, so many personalities becoming perfect and advancing in devotional service, going back to Godhead. But we do not hear of any examples of anyone merging into the Brahman. Think about it. It doesn't happen. We talk about it, but it just doesn't happen. You know, it's just like one will say, no, but then that would be a lie. So what about the one that you're going to be happy here? That I'm going to have money, I'll be happy. I'll have a family, I'll be happy. I'll have children, I'll be happy. I'll have a nice house, I'll be happy. I have nice clothes, I have nice ornaments. I have a good husband and wife, I'll be happy. What about all those lies? Same lies. That just means we're used to karma, and gyan doesn't mean anything to us, so therefore there's no attachment. So Zogo goes, say, okay, that's bogus, give that up. Right? But the Mayavada, the Buddha, they're attached to the detachment. So therefore they'll go, no, it has value. But all the other things, the money, the facility, that has no value. That's all illusion. But the point is it's just two aspects of the same illusion. So desire can't be gotten rid of. That's the process of Krishna consciousness, is switching the desire from not being connected to Krishna to being connected to Krishna. Then maturing that from being connected to Krishna to actually being favorable to Krishna. And then from being favorable to Krishna, that we remove any idea that my pleasure will be the focus, but it'll be Krishna's pleasure will be the focus. So we see in this, desire is not left out. It's just transferred. So the point of austerity, the control of the senses, all these things are there because that would be what you do if you had love for Krishna. You're only practicing what you would do if you had love for Krishna. So that I control my senses, that's not the important element. The important element is that you've controlled them because you want to do something for Krishna. Mother Jashoda, instead of sitting in the kitchen, you know, gossiping on the phone with the other, you know, elder gopis and making arrangements when she's going to go to the spa and looking for a good babysitter like that and snacking on things while she's cooking, she's, you know, focused on making arrangements for Krishna. That's sense control. That's austerity. Why is she doing that? Because of her love for Krishna. She wants Krishna to be happy. Therefore, she's sense control. Here we make the mistake. No, being sense control, that's Krishna consciousness. And that's where we fail. As dry as a bone, then it's really good. That's really Krishna conscious. No. Senses are engaged. But if you can't engage them in something good, then better don't engage them. Right? It means if the child's only going to do nonsense, then better he does nothing. That's why the impersonal philosophy is there. Those who are just doing nonsense, then you stop them doing nonsense. But as soon as they've calmed down, immediately they're engaged in direct activities. But the point is that it's only devotional service can do that quickly. All other aspects, you're talking millions of lifetimes here to switch from one to the other, to calm down. I mean, we see Buddhism is established, 2,500 BC, like that. But we see that to make that switch, then Shankara is 1,200 years ago. So it's already been, you know, 3,500 years to kind of get the mood and the atmosphere calmed down enough that now they could take up dealing with the Vedas again without getting distracted by gross sense gratification. And then that takes some time, and it's not until years later that then, how you say, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya come. And then only after you properly establish the Vaishnava, then Lord Chaitanya comes. Right? And then that being established, then it takes some time before the founder Acharya comes. So, like this, then we see is that it takes time, but the devotional process is the quickest. So in one lifetime, one can go from being absorbed or distracted so much to being absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So the rules and regulations are to see that we're engaged in useful activities and we are not engaged in those things that are not useful. But it's not the detachment, the renunciation, that's the point. The point is that detachment only has a value if it means the result is for Krishna's pleasure. Because otherwise detachment also means I'm just the soul and I'm not looking at relationship with God. Right? Because if I have a relationship with God, I'm dependent. It means I'm attached. Right? You can't have a relationship unless you're attached, unless you're connected. Does that make sense? So it would be contradictory to think that this there. So the point is that one is making that endeavor to be austere for Krishna, that's a good sign. But it's not the austerity itself, it's the trying to please Krishna through one's activities. That's what's important. So, depending upon one's situation, then attachment or detachment will be more engaged. The brahmacharis engage more detachment. The grihasas engage more attachment. But the point is desire is never left. Desire is never given up. It's just that it's being wrongly applied because we don't have an alternative. Right? Alternative means it's realistic to us. Does that make sense? It means something to us. So when it means something, then it works. It works. So that's why by sticking to the process and not becoming distracted, one becomes purified. In that purified state, one becomes fixed. And then in that fixed state, if that continues, one develops a taste. Once one develops a taste, that's when it starts to move very quickly, very dynamically. Does that make sense? Because before that, it's moving, you know, along but very systematically. But once that taste is there, then it moves very quickly. The example is given of dry leaves being blown away in a storm. That the dry leaves are like our impurities. So like that, they're blown away. So the taste is... Because the point is Krishna. The point's not the detachment. Right? That's like we see is even Brahma Loka's yogis, right? So yogis meditate on the super soul. Okay, but below that, you know, the Tapa Loka and Jana Loka, then they're doing austerities or, you know, mental speculation. But that doesn't necessarily have to be connected with the Lord. So they're in a lower position. So even though we complain about all of them, even the yogis, but the yogis, because there's connection with super soul, there is the option they could take up that devotional element. Right? Because Brahma's a devotee. They could take it up. Right? So we see is like after Durvasa Muni and that whole episode with Ambarish Maharaj, he was impressed by the devotee. You know, and by the Lord and how the Lord protects the devotee and everything. Therefore, he went back to Brahma Loka, you know, discussing the glories of devotional service and the interaction of the devotee. Before that, he's just a great yogi. Right? So we can see is the more it connects to Krishna, that's what's better. But according to one's conditioning, that's what one engages. So if one is more detached, in other words, if one's attached to detachment, that's what he's engaging. So we'll say, No, I'm detached. No, it just means you're attached to detachment. Right? That's all. Otherwise, if one's not attached, Why is it that everybody else has to do it because you're doing it? Does that make sense? Like, I'm detached, I'm doing this, why isn't everybody else doing it? I mean, there's so many things in this movement. Thousands of aspects, but we'll focus on one thing because that's what we're doing and that's all we see for others. You understand? Because we're attached to detachment. Right? Because the soul is attached. So now the point is that attachment connected to Krishna? That's the only point. Right? So if those attachments are guided by the Veda, then that's better. If the means the animals are acting according to their, just according to their whim. That's why they're the lowest. The human has that point of choice, and that choice is whether to follow God's laws or not. So if they don't, then they're like the animals. If they do, then that's progressive. That of that, those who follow the Vedas for, you know, higher and higher aspects of elevation, and that's considered better than that. But those who understand that devotional service is actually the purpose of the human endeavor, then that's the best. Yeah. Does that make sense? So whatever one's that range in between, all of it can be connected. That's why the Shastra is there. We'll tend to say, oh, we don't worry about all these things, but that's fine if all you're doing is sitting and chanting. If you're sitting and chanting 3 lakhs of names a day, or, you know, chanting and just preaching, and that's it, I mean that's it, nothing else, then you don't have to worry about anything else. You have Bhagavatam, Gita, Nectar, what else do you need? But if there's position, there's management, there's bureaucracy, there's families, there's facilities, there's vacations, you need them. But their only use is that their ability to show you how to connect that material need to Krishna. That's the point. People are into their body, into their minds, you know, into what they eat, when they eat it, how they eat it. Right? Just look around. So therefore God gives Ayurveda to tell you how to do that. But its only purpose is to take prasad and live a healthy life in Krishna consciousness, a regulated life in Krishna consciousness. That's the only purpose of it. But because we have so many distractions on these things, then so many aspects are there. So if those who get into the practices, those are all there. Those who get into the medicinal aspect, that's there. Those who get into the science of it, that's there. So it takes care of everybody. Right? Or one wants to get everything done and wants to be successful in this world and all that. Therefore, there's Niti Shastra, there's Artha Shastra. They tell you how to get it done. But its only purpose is to please Krishna. Get something done for Krishna. We get something done for ourselves, hey, everybody's doing that. Does that make sense? So that's why they're there. So otherwise, then we turn to other sources, other authorities. And then the problem is being, not having perfect senses, their observations of the world won't be complete. Therefore, the application of their theories will fall short. And again, we're not satisfied. Otherwise, why are there unlimited books on all kinds of things, right? There's not in anything else. You understand it means there's not. You know, in your traditional society, like, there's a couple of cookbooks. There's one Arthashastra. There's one Bhagavad Gita. You know, there's one Patanjali Yoga. There's one Shankya. You don't need more because it has everything. Everything's in it. You understand it, then you can make it unlimited. You don't understand it, then, of course, you try to look for something else. Does that make sense? So, it's by habit that we think that the forms themselves are the concept of our happiness. So until we switch to new forms, devotional forms, then they'll always be a distraction. But even it's not the forms, it's the actual trying to engage, interact with these forms to please Krishna. That's the actual point. So when that's appreciated, then one doesn't have problem with forms. Does that make sense? Yes. Okay. Something else? Yes. Okay, so matter who's the queen of Vrindavan, okay. Means taking from the point of Krishna as the prince, so Nanda Baba is the king of Vrindavan. It's just a matter of take what relationship you're dealing with. So naturally, if you're dealing with the elder gopis, the management of Vrindavan, then Nanda Baba is the king, so that would place her as the queen. But that's not the essential element. The king meaning he's the one who leads the cowherd men. They're not nobility, so he's not a king. He's the king of the cowherd, like you see in Srimad Bhagavatam, that some of the Phalashrutis that are described at the end of the chapter, then in one, at the end of one of the stories, one of the narrations, then it's said that, you know, a Brahmin, he'll become, you know, greatly knowledgeable in the Shastra, a king will become emperor of the world, a Vaishya will become king of Vaishyas, and a Shudra will become a devotee. Right? So, there we see is that you're on the village level, you have these kings, but they're not actually the kings. You know what I'm saying? That's why Nanda Baba has to take, you know, all their goods, and once a year they go to Mathura and pay the tax. Because the kings are in Mathura. That's where the nobility is. Right? So it's different. So it's also, yeah. But it doesn't mean that they don't have their armies, they don't have their methods of, you know, taxation and everything running. So it appears like, but at the same time, it's for business. You understand? Like the government collects taxes so that they can protect the people. A tax collector collects taxes as a business. You understand? Like that. So the perspective is what makes it work. So now if we're looking at it in actuality, yes, he's the prince from both elements. You know, is that prince in comparing with the gopis and that interaction, but also as the son of Nanda Maharaj. But in likewise, as Vrishabhanu is also in his area, he's the head of those cowherd men, right? Just, you know, just like, what's his name? Govardhan? Is it Govardhan? Govardhan Mazumdar. He's of the group in Yavat. So you have Yavat, Barshana, and Nandagan. But of them, the Nanda Baba is considered the senior, like that. So that's why when he says we'll move here or there, then, you know, then that happens. So therefore, she is also on that same kind of platform. But being the goddess of fortune, her situation is more opulent. Vrishabhanu is more opulent than Nanda Baba. Like that. So, therefore, you see there's that natural respect between them. One is actually more opulent and all that, but at the same time, the other is the leader of the community. So, but the grudge is going on because of the relationship between Radha and Krishna. That's the actual point. Radha and Krishna can fully manifest, means relationship between Radha and Krishna, that's Vrindavan. That Radha and Krishna can fully manifest all the varieties of moods and nobody's going to be upset. That's called brudge. If it's Radha and Krishna worship, but there's elements that devotees aren't that appreciative of, then that creates different kinds of Vrindavan. Right? So Vrindavan's the generic term. like that. Like we see in some of the Puranas, it talks about the avatar in the Dwapara Yuga is Krishna, and his wife, his consort, is Radharani. They're married, right? Because they're Vishnumurtis and they're doing their activities. So it's not that it's not something that would be appreciated. You know, Mother Jashoda is always thinking Radharani should marry Krishna. Therefore, the pastimes of Mother Jashoda putting turmeric on Radharani's hands. And then, but then, how do you say, everybody's happy, everybody's celebrating. And then Yoga Maya, you know, she's, you know, involved and she goes, wait a minute. Then if that's the case, then the Parakiya Rasa can't manifest. So then she arranges that some other aspect comes up. So they're not married. But that's what everyone would like. I mean, of course, except for a few. I mean, Jatila and Kotila and them. They're not so impressed with the idea. But other than them, then everybody's pleased with that. So, and then within that, you have the element of separation. So that's something that's unique to Braj. Other kind of realms of Vrindavan, you don't have that. Or it's not emphasized. You know, Vishwanath talks about, I think it's Vishwanath, unless it's Baladev, a form of Goloka that has all the opulence. Means Vrindavan's the most opulent, but no one really notices it. You know, it's like there's a wall, and on the wall you have little sticks, you know, I mean little things sticking out for birds to sit on. You know, because the parrots will come and sit and you can feed them and stuff like this. But some of them there are parrots that are carved out of a solid piece of emerald. And they're so realistic that the parrots themselves think they're parrots. So they'll come and sit down next to them, start talking to them and everything like this. So if this was Vaikuntha, everyone would go, wow, what opulence, what great, see the greatness of Vishnu and all that, he has such opulence. In Vrindavan, they just laugh at the bird. See how funny the bird is. They think that the emerald bird is real, you know. So it's just something fun to add to the interaction, to be a cause of interaction, you know. You know, it's just like, you know, you have a, previously, you'd be very common, you'd have in great houses, or even big houses, you would have, conversation pieces. You know, something from a far off land that's very rare and unique. And it's sitting there in a very nice place so that somebody will notice it and it'll start a conversation. The point is to have a conversation. It's not that the thing itself is necessarily that important. Not socially. Maybe personally you may collect artifacts that are, you know, you like, you know. But it's basically to start conversation. Does that make sense? You know, so the idea is that in Vrindavan all the wonderfulness is to create interaction. But there is a form where Radharani goes to the rasa dance in a swan airplane. They don't walk. And she goes with 10 million maidservants just to make sure it's all perfect and wonderful for the rasa dance. So there's, you know, a mix that people want to say they like Radhika, but they like the majesty. You know, or Radha and Krishna are always together, they're never separated. They just go from one cuisine, because the element of separation the devotee can't actually handle, that intensity is actually favorable. So that's why when it's said Lord Chaitanya gave something was never given before, it means that. That mood, that depth of intensity, of affection is so great that therefore, even if Krishna goes away or doesn't deal properly, it's not going to affect the love. So you can imagine if you have that freedom, how much is manifest. You have, let us say you have a small child, I mean very small, you know, not big enough to actually understand the whole social thing, but big enough to be interactive, right? So three, 4 years old. Now, if that child doesn't get much attention, they won't interact much. They'll stay on their own. They won't interact much. But if the child is showered with affection and attention and everything's about them, and it doesn't matter what they do, the attention's still about them, then they become very, very confident. And they interact on everything and very fully and very participate very much because they know they're the center. But if you don't know you're the center, you don't have the confidence. Not that God lacks confidence, but point is he reciprocates with the devotee as they surrender. So they don't appreciate giving him that much leeway. He doesn't take that much leeway. So he could do anything, which is what the verse Aslishiva Paradatam Pinashkamam Adarshanam Marmahatam Karotiba. That's what that's meaning. Anything you do, it doesn't matter, we'll still love you. 100%. Not 50% like in Dwarka. 100%. Right? So then, therefore, you get these wonderful childhood pastimes that you won't see anywhere else. Because no one else can handle that intensity. But at the same time, you miss out on the sweetness. So that's what's going on. You understand? So these different realms, it's the mood that's there. So therefore, how much Krishna can manifest his full character. So with Radharani, he can manifest that full character because she is the complete internal potency. He's the complete Godhead. So therefore, Vrindavan is all about them. Actually, the whole creation is about them, but according to one's surrender, therefore all the realms are manifest. So Vrindavan's the main thing. So therefore, in that environment, therefore he's the king and she's the queen. Or depending on what it is, he's the prince and she's the princess. If you're looking at their youth, you'll say prince and princess. If you're thinking of their control of the situation, you know, control of the rasa, then you'll say king and queen. Because if she's the queen, then she has an authority that you don't think of as the princess. The princess, then her sweetness, her femininity, her that wonderful interaction, the variety, that's what you'll think of as princess. But as queen, then you'll think how she can control Krishna. And if Krishna doesn't do what she wants, she becomes upset because she's the queen. You understand? So depending upon the context of what they're describing, you use the different terms. So they're all synonyms, but they have different connotations for different situations in which the rasa is tasted in different ways. Is that okay? Something else? Yes. No mic, you're on your own. Oh, you have a mic. Hey.
So we constantly hear that Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes are the sweetest and most attractive. Well, although I have been hearing for quite a few years, I mean, I don't think that I have developed much of attraction for those pastimes as distinct from, you know, any other pastimes in the Bhagavatam. There's not really much charm in my heart generated towards the Vrindavan mood or the atmosphere, and it just appears there's the same stories that we have been hearing, you know, Krishna, you know, the rasa dance or anything, any other pastime. And rather, I feel more interested to hear, you know, the creation and the other aspects where we can learn more lessons from, you know, at a particular stage. But it appears that the Vrindavan pastimes are not so relevant to our present stage of, you know, devotional service. So how do we appreciate these pastimes better than...
The point is Rupa Goswami gives the example that the materialistic heart is like the soul having jaundice. And so one of the symptoms or main qualities one sees in jaundice is the lack of appreciation of sweetness. It just doesn't mean anything. If you taste sugar when you have jaundice, it just tastes neutral. But if the jaundice is really bad, it'll actually taste bitter. So as the heart becomes purified, then one can, as that jaundice of material life goes away, one can start to appreciate the sweetness like that. So it's just a matter of practice. One doesn't have to be worried about it, or at the same time, one shouldn't think it's unnecessary. Because the point is, as Krishna points out in the Chatur Shloki, that he has pervaded everything, he has created everything, but he is a person that's still beyond that. Right? So he gives the indication that though we may be absorbed in the creation, and we can learn so much from it that is relevant for our focus and practice of interacting with material energy, but still, the reason material energy acts that way is because of its being the reflection of what's in the spiritual world. So, that you're saying it's relevant at this stage, that's correct. But to say that the spiritual pastimes are not relevant, I mean, let's say that in the spiritual world, the Vrindavan pastimes aren't relevant, that just means we don't understand the mechanics. We're only able to apply the mechanics in one thing. Like this, according to Vedic standards, or most standards of the world, even according to modern, this is a machine because it does something. It moves, and because of its movement, it does something. So it's actually a machine, right? So, but we'll think, no, machine has to have so many parts and this and gears and make noise or stink or, you know, do something like that. Then it's, you know what I'm saying? So that's only our conditioning. We're not able to appreciate that this is the machine, right? Because then you have to appreciate that it's doing something. While the other one is really, really obvious. You know what I'm saying? The creation is connected to the Lord, and through His desire, the various forms of life and situations in which life can be enacted and the results of those actions, that's what's the primary creation, right? That's the universal form. And then the operation of that, right? So that's how we become bound. How the living entity who's eternal, servant of Krishna, has converted the concept of eternality and happiness into dead matter. So that's what creation describes. How did we make the mistake that dead matter is actually alive and can create happiness and it's eternal? So the mechanics of creation explain to us how that's not a reality, that it's still Krishna that's making it function. It's still Him is pervading it that makes it work. So that the importance of that is it takes our attention, our attention that's applied into the material energy becomes tricked into thinking about Krishna. Does that make sense? But that's its importance, is how to get out of the material world, because the Brahman and Paramatma aspects of the Lord, they apply to the material world. They don't apply in the spiritual world. That makes sense? The material world is based on the formulas of the spiritual world. But you don't have to have creation there. You don't have to have destruction. So therefore, these things aren't important there. Does that make sense? Because in Vaikuntha, Krishna's in the mood of, I'm God. But in the Purusha avatars, it's I'm the creator, maintainer, and destroyer. So that means then you have to have the creation, you have to maintain it as Paramahamsa, and you destroy it. Right? Does that make sense? Therefore, whatever attracts you in Krishna consciousness, you go on with that and see that the sadhana is steady and regular, that the association of devotees associate with those devotees that are more advanced. And then with time, the heart becomes purified and these other aspects will have more meaning. Right? Because, yeah, does that make sense? Yes. Renunciation.
Mother Yashoda and how she's so renounced because she's doing everything for just for Krishna, controlling her senses. But often we, especially in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says that renunciation is the emblem of the devotees of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And there's so many stories of renunciation, like Raghunath Das Goswami, he's begging in front of the temple, then he stops begging, and then he finally ends up just taking food that's thrown out. And Lord Chaitanya is pleased at each step of his renunciation.
But what's the significance of him giving these things up? You know what I'm saying? What is being renounced?
Well, he was a rich boy. That's
what the money's not him, it's his in the first place. So the point is that he's becoming more and more dependent upon the Lord. Right? And at the same time is that humility that he doesn't want to bother anybody else. The significance of him eating the leftover rice is not that it's the rice that they didn't sell in the bazaar and they threw it outside. He leaves it there still until the cows have eaten it. And then when it's come to the point where the cows won't eat it, that means no one wants it. Then he'll take that and wash it and then eat that hard inner center.
So that's extreme renunciation.
Yes, but you're missing the point. The renunciation is the medium for getting something done. It's just like this. Let's say I am sticking a picture on the wall. So I use a drill and I use a hammer and I use a screw. So now to get that work done, I have to focus on those things. But what's the real point of the you know, screwdriver and the hammer and all these different things? What's the real point of it? Yes. Yeah, so what's the real point of the renunciation? You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise, something won't stand up. Renunciation is a quality of Krishna. It's a quality of Brahman. It's generic. So where does it take up that personal element? It's when it's connected with the person. So renunciation means performing your duties. That's renunciation. So it's not that. So he's a sannyasi. So therefore, he's following these kind of elements. So he's simply engaging renunciation. But renunciation is still Krishna's quality. It's still Krishna's opulence. So he himself is not technically renounced. He can be the instrument for the manifestation of renunciation. Krishna is actually who's renounced.
All right, so in this question, then my question would be, using your formula, wouldn't it have been better if Raghunath Das Goswami took all his money and started spending it on devotees or building temples?
And he showed that.
He's a real, real rich man.
Yeah,
why this a focus on, he's the richest man's son in West Bengal.
No, you could probably say more like the world.
Yeah, in the world. He was so wealthy.
Yeah, but the point
is... So why this form? Why does it have to take this form? And why is it that Lord Chaitanya is praising this form?
Unlimited forms. Why shouldn't this form be... One quality of Krishna is praiseworthy.
Okay, so why isn't that form...
No, see, because you're making a value judgment here that therefore if it's not about giving up the money, then we should have the money. But
no,
you could go either way. You could have the money or not have the money. So here it's not have the money, so that's the taste going on. But like, Pundarik Vidyaniti, he has the money. The king of Puri, he has the money. And they're using it that way. Shivananda's son, he has money. Right? Hiranyagarbha and what is it? Hiranya? And Govardhan Mazumdar, they got the money. Because when Raghunath Das left, they left them with the money. Right? So they're showing those things. The point is because we think the money is what's important, the medium is what's important, therefore adjusting that medium into others that bring it closer and closer to that dependency on Krishna. That's used. So because the renunciation is closer to being out of the material world. But in the spiritual world, the renunciation in that form isn't considered very important to be that prominent. It's there. That means Radharani has the blessings of Durvasa Muni, that she can, whatever she cooks will be nectar, and whoever eats it, it will, you know, prolong their life. Therefore, because of that, then she's sought after to cook for Krishna. Otherwise, why would she end up cooking for Krishna? She's someone else's wife. Right? So that renunciation element is there. It's respected. Because for them, there's no difference between the upper and lower Goloka. So here in Gokul, then you have all the elements of renunciation and all that. But the point is engaging everything in Krishna's service. So he's engaging renunciation fully in Krishna's service. Because that's his duty. So Mother Jashoda, she's the mother of Krishna. So she has different duties. But the point is performing that renunciation to please Krishna is what actually is what's important. Because otherwise we have other great renunciates, but they don't do it for Krishna. And they're respected, but not praised, not in the devotional circles. Right? It means that quality is because it's Krishna's renunciation, so they can see Krishna there, but it's not considered as important. So here it's because one's giving up all the involvements, but he's absorbing himself in Krishna. If you just sat in a barrel somewhere, you know, like Diogenes, then no one, we wouldn't care so much, you know. But he's not. He's always absorbed in chanting and hearing and discussing Krishna Lila. So therefore he's shifting from one to the other. Then you can see, you can function, you can live without being absorbed in the material energy. Because for the neophyte, his taking the money and engaging in Krishna's service is indirect devotional service. Because he's only engaging the money because he actually wants money. And when he doesn't want money, he gives it up. So what you're talking about is like Bali Maharaj, is that he doesn't need the money anymore. Right? He took over the whole universe and he gave it to Krishna. And he's happy to just be his humble servant. So he's qualified to have the universe. Therefore, he can have all that opulence. So he's the example of that. Right? So Bali Maharaj, he's an example of having everything. Yudhishthir Maharaj is an example of having everything. Sudama, Vipra, because they don't need anything. But the other element is that someone has the money and they engage. It's not having the money and engaging it. It's what's the mentality that goes with the having the money and engaging it. Right? So one person has the money, engages it, but then they will feel, I'm doing all this service because of, you know, I have the wealth. And that pride can come up. So we see is that having that, that there shouldn't be that, how you say? The mentality is the same. So even you have a billionaire, he could still follow Raghunath Das Goswami's example in the mentality of dealing with money and still have his money and use it. But it's the mentality that is there. The activity is a medium. Chanting Hare Krishna, that's direct. Worshipping the deity, that's direct. Right? Like that. Hearing Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, living in the Dham, these are direct. But all these other elements are indirect. And so then it's a matter of the quality of how much you connect it to the Lord or not. That means it becomes devotional or not. So renunciation, you connect it to the Lord like Raghunath Das, then it becomes great. But if you don't connect it to the Lord, it's not so special. Right? Therefore, Vishwamitra, he's very renounced, very austere. But the example is given that he got overwhelmed by Menaka. While Haridas Thakur, same situation, he didn't. In fact, it's not that he's, if you look at it, the sages and all that, then they'll, you know, they'll be, you know, not the women, this and that. But Haridas Thakur is speaking very sweetly to her. Oh, yes, yes, you want to enjoy? Okay, please. You say, you're a prostitute. Yes, yes, you sit down. But I'm busy, I have to chant these rounds, you know, I chant all these things. So when I finish my vow, then I can enjoy with you. So he's spoken just that will the prostitute will be happy. She'll feel secure, she'll feel she's not being chased off, she feels she's got an opportunity. You know, he's dealing with her as a girl. All these things, he's dealing very sweet and nice. And then naturally she falls asleep, morning comes, and then, you know, business hours are over. And so she leaves. And then she comes the next night. So this goes on for 3 nights. Right? So he's sitting there, you know, with the prostitute, chanting. She's hearing, you know, pure, unalloyed chanting. After 3 days, she goes home, gives away everything, shaves up, and sits down and chants Hare Krishna. So the aspect, as you can see, is that even the devotee's renunciation goes beyond. It doesn't have the hardness. Hardness is still a symptom that we're still attached. But we're pious and we're engaging in Krishna's service. But as we become purified, we have a taste for the devotional, that hardness and that regimentation of renunciation isn't the attractive feature. It's simply a way of life. It doesn't become prominent. Does that make sense? So such devotees, that's what's dear. That person who, having given up everything because they're so absorbed in Krishna and they're not worried about the material energy, whether it's in great attachment or detachment, that's what's dear. That's Akinchana Gochara. Like that. Is that okay? Okay, so we'll end here. Shai Ho. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jainatai Gaura Premanandi.